copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Let's look at the issue of what is the transgender agenda first of all, and then we'll come back after some more discussion, look at another video, and then look at the second talk on how Christians should be responding. And it's true that this transgender agenda really has absolutely exploded, really in the last 2 or 3 years. Germaine Greer might be a name many of you know. She was one of the icons of feminism when I was a student, and she was recently no-platformed on a university in Britain at Cardiff University, which means she wasn't able to speak, and the students got a petition to stop her because of her transphobic views, supposedly. And she simply said that she didn't think trans women were real women. And she was saying that from deep convictions as a feminist. And you've got to ask yourself questions when people this radical are being denied free speech, then something pretty serious is happening. And she's not alone. Peter Tatchell, a gay rights activist, was similarly banned. Now, the real game changer for this whole issue internationally really was the transition of Bruce Jenner into Caitlyn Jenner with this famous picture on the Vanity Fair magazine a couple of years ago. And Bruce Jenner, many people of my generation will remember as a 1970s gold medalist in the decathlon for the US, but now a member of the Kardashian family, connected, and has announced that he is now to be known as Caitlyn. And then on this side of the Atlantic, we had the film starring Eddie Redmayne, The Danish Girl, which was based on the true story of a Danish man called Lily Elba, who was married and then transitioned from male to female and died as a consequence of the surgery. And Eddie Redmayne, doing this film, said that he'd changed his views on the issue. So we're seeing something deeply embedded into celebrity culture and in the media. Facebook wanted to play ball with this, so they gave people an option of choosing the gender they wanted to identify with. And when it got up to 71, they decided it was getting a little bit out of hand. And so now to go into Facebook, you have man, woman, or other, please specify. You might say, well, what are those 71 genders? Well, every one, you can recognize the ones in the top left-hand corner as male and female, but the others, most of which you probably will not have heard of, but each one an individual has given. And it seems to be that there are many people wanting to be identified as something absolutely unique. This whole idea that gender is fluid across a continuum. Now, all ideas start somewhere, and what gets whispered in university ivory towers in one generation gets shouted in the streets in the next. And this, although it's burst upon the scene very quickly, has been a long time coming from ideological and philosophical roots. And there are probably three main contributors to this. First of all, radical feminism. And we know the first and second waves of feminism, very few people would have any problem with. It was about women getting the vote and being treated equally in the workforce. But the third wave of radical feminism is all about throwing off the male yoke and understanding the whole of history in terms of man's oppression of women and wanting to redefine what the female role is all about. So that's one. And then there's Gnosticism, which of course was the heresy that John was addressing in 1 John, the idea that our physical bodies are somehow evil or wrong and that our real self is in the soul or internally with other elements. So this idea of liberating the authentic inner you, what some people have called neo-Gnosticism. And then there's queer theory, which is actually a respected academic discipline now in universities. You can be a professor of it. One of the most famous professors of queer theory was Rosaria Butterfield, who was later converted from an active lesbian lifestyle to become an evangelical Christian, has written a number of quite astounding books about the whole issue. And then on top of these philosophical changes, there's the narrative power of story, in soap or in film or in real life. So the Caitlyn Jenners and Eddie Redmaynes of this world. And that's really what the younger generation in particular are being exposed to on YouTube and so on. So this is where the ideas are fed out. Now, what is queer theory? Well, it came out of feminism, and the whole idea of it was destroying the idea that male and female were two distinct types, what they called rupturing the norm of the male, of the man-woman binary. So it was all about overturning deeply held traditional ideas. And like all new ideas, it sought to redefine the language as well and introduce a whole lot of new terms. So woman and man were seen as myths, not real, social constructs. So things that have been the product of the way people are being brought up, or as was expressed in the video, the product of a biased society. So the language that people are assigned a gender at birth rather than being recognized to be of a certain sex. And this whole idea that these norms are used to oppress people to cause violence comes from radical feminism. And what the whole movement, the transgender movement, is seeking to gain is not just tolerance or inclusivity. They want something more than that. They want to redefine what we think normal actually is. And this word queer is used often as a verb. Queering means undermining, shaking, or unsettling what's regarded as normal. And so we need to be very careful to distinguish, on the one hand, transgender ideology with its philosophical roots and celebrity endorsement, on the one hand, from gender dysphoria, which is a real medical condition, which we're going to come on the other. And as Christians, we need to be both people who understand it at a philosophical level, but also can be compassionate and loving at an individual human level as well. Now, all changes in ideology and in culture will eventually shape laws. And what's happened in Britain is happening in lots of countries all around the world. But what happened in Britain was back in 2004, we had the Gender Recognition Act. And this allowed transgender people to be legally recognised in their new chosen gender. But they had to fulfil a number of conditions. They had to live in their chosen gender for 2 years. They had to be 18 or over, and they had to have the endorsement of two doctors to certify that, and then they could get a gender recognition certificate and had them to be treated like the opposite sex. They didn't have to have hormones or surgery or anything like that, just those three conditions. And then a few years later, the Equality Act made it illegal to discriminate against transgender people. So that's currently where we're at in Britain. But there is a committee in the House of Commons, our lower house in Parliament, which wants to move even more and introduce much more radical changes. And amongst those changes, they want to lower the age from 18. So you see similarities with age of sexual consent, homosexuality, and so on. They want to be able to use puberty blockers for children and cross sex hormones for teenagers. So that means giving children hormonal drugs to stop the onset of puberty so that they've got more time to decide what gender they want to identify as. And then there's the non-gendering of official records, so passports don't carry a sex. And along with that, the next thing they want to do is to make not gender reassignment the issue with regard to discrimination, but gender identity the issue. So someone doesn't have to have 2 years living, two doctors' signatures, and be 18. They simply have to self-identify as a gender, and then you'll be legally obliged to treat them in every way on that gender. Now, what's very interesting is the way that the medical profession has been swept up in this, seemingly not on any evidence-based grounds, but on ideological grounds. And we see this in the classification of mental health disorders, because up until the year 2013, we call this condition gender identity disorder, and it was classified in the DSM-4, which is the classification of all the mental health disorders that there are. And this is what I was taught at medical school that it was. And then in 2013, in the latest version, they changed it from gender identity disorder to gender dysphoria. And the change is very significant, because what it's saying is that unless there's deep distress associated with this, it's not a mental health condition at all, but simply a normal variant. So the problem is in the way people are being treated, in a sense. And again, I'm saying this, the change was strongly ideologically driven. Now, we, like many others, had to change our literature as a result of this. So this article that CMF put out in 2004 was written by Andrew Sims, a Bible-believing Christian, professor of psychiatry and president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists in Britain. But we had to rewrite the whole thing to fit in with the new terminology in order to address it. And we found it virtually impossible to find an author who was qualified in mental health who would put their name to it. Not because many people were unsympathetic with the change, but because of the difficulties for academics to express views that were regarded as completely commonplace just a few years ago. So as it comes to retired surgeons and like me and general physicians like Rick Thomas to write these things, but of course with lots of input from people who are more academically qualified. And so we see now in Britain, if you go to the Royal College of Psychiatrists website, you'll find an 80-page booklet which describes in great detail all the procedures that people can go through, both mental and physical, hormonal and surgical, in order to change gender. And this document has the endorsement of every medical college in Britain. And when I give these talks to Christian doctors in Britain, and I say, hands up if you're a member of a Royal Medical College, then all of the hands will go up. And I say, leave your hands up if you were aware of the existence of this document, produced by one of your medical colleges and endorsed by all the others that's been out for 4 years, and virtually all the hands will go down. It's one or two specialists who are even aware. So it's happened very subtly by the backdoor route. Now, the fundamental question is this. If there is incongruence or disconnection between the mind and the body, between the beliefs the person has and what they are biologically, what do you do? Well, you can go two ways with that. Do we alter the body to conform to the gender identity through hormones or transgender surgery? Well, that's what people are now saying. Or alternatively, should we alter the identity to conform to the body? Give people support, counseling, psychotherapy to help them to be reconciled to what they are biologically? Or do we just try and support them in their conflicted state? And that's the key question. And you can tell from where I'm coming from that I haven't changed my views from what doctors used to believe 10 or so years ago. But we're now seeing an explosion of referrals to transgender clinics. This is an article about clinics in the UK, where the number of referrals are doubling every year. And a family practitioner rang me up recently to say, I'm seeing one gender-conflicted teenager at my Southeast England university town clinic every day, a new one. They're all on antidepressants and they all want referral to the gender identity clinic. So what are we seeing? Are we seeing an explosion of a new phenomenon, or are we actually seeing what I would term transgender contagion fueled by celebrity pressure and a change in ideology? What is it that makes people see something quite different when they look in the mirror? And we need to be very clear on our terms. There's biological sex, which is determined by chromosomes. We'll come back into that in the second talk. But gender, people are saying, is something different. The psychological, social, and cultural aspects of being male or female, and gender identity is your experience, what you think or feel about yourself and how masculine or feminine you are. Gender dysphoria is this term that's now used to describe the distress that people feel as a result of this conflict between what they believe about themselves and their body. And that definition there is from Yarhouse, one of the books we recommend. Now, just finally in this talk, I wanted to raise a very important issue of what we call intersex, because intersex and transgender are two different phenomena. And yet there is an attempt to conflate them and make it sound as though that they are the same. In transgender, the hormones, the chromosomes, the internal and external organs are all either male or female, but the thoughts or beliefs are different. In intersex, there is a biological abnormality in the chromosomes or the hormones or in the sensitivity of hormones to sensitivity of tissues to hormones or in the internal or external genitalia. And doctors recognize dozens of different conditions that fall in this category. And as a general surgeon training through pediatric surgery, I saw a lot of children with these intersex conditions, and there were well agreed pathways about how each one of them should be managed. But intersex is not transgender, nor vice versa. So don't be fooled into thinking that we're talking about the same thing here. So these are just a few examples of intersex. So let's stop there. It's the first talk.